There are no guarantees in life that you and I are going to live to a ripe old age, but in and be in good mental and physical health right up to the end. But the really good news is that there's a lot you and I can do to increase our chances of warding off dementia. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. A University of California, San Francisco study in 2011 found that seven factors, diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, smoking, depression, physical inactivity, and low educational attainment contribute to up to half of Alzheimer's diseases. And that means there are multiple ways that you and I can decrease our chances of dealing with that devastating disease. Dr. Mark Sager is the recently retired director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute, professor emeritus at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Back again. Gosh, it's been a while. And Dr. Sager, great to see you again and great to have you back.
Well, thank you.
First of all, can you define Alzheimer's disease for us?
Yes. Alzheimer's disease is a chronic degenerative disease of the brain that eventually results in cognitive loss as well as severe enough to cause people to have problems with functioning, whether it's occupational performance or whatever. And it's the most common cause of dementia. Dementia is the general term, and there are lots of causes of dementia. Strokes can cause dementia, for example.
So it's but it does differ from other forms of dementia.
Yes. Pathologically, if you look at the brain of someone who's had Alzheimer's disease, they'll have these plaques and tangles, and that's the hallmark of the disease.
Yeah. And as you well know, my mom had Alzheimer's, and it's died from Alzheimer's, and people do die from it.
Yes.
How many people are living with it in our state here, and maybe in our country?
In the Alzheimer's Association estimates that there are approximately 5 million persons in the country with Alzheimer's disease. In Wisconsin, the most recent figures suggest about 130,000 individuals with dementia and Alzheimer's disease.
So that's a lot of people.
Yes, it is.
A lot of people. Dr. Mark Sager, our guest today, a recently retired director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute. And great to have him along. And I haven't given the number, so I want to do that right now. If you have a question or comment, does one of your parents have Alzheimer's or another form of dementia? Do you worry about what it means for your health? Maybe you unconsciously have made some lifestyle choices to help prevent dementia. What do you do? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Tell us about the Wisconsin Registry for Alzheimer's Prevention.
This is a study that we started in the year 2000. It's a longitudinal study consisting almost of adult children of people with Alzheimer's disease and other volunteers. And we've been studying for the last almost 15 years, and we're looking for the earliest signs of dementia, changes that might put someone at risk. We're trying to understand why some people develop Alzheimer's disease and others do not.
Yeah. How many people are in your study?
You know? Over 1,500.
Wow. And some findings, even though, well, it's 15 years, you're going to probably have some good findings or interesting findings.
Yes. What we're finding, and again, the article that was in the Wisconsin State Journal did a very nice job summarizing what we know. And what we know is that all of us, including you, including me, inherit a genetic predisposition for a lot of diseases. It could be heart disease. Mm-hmm. It could be Alzheimer's disease. And what we know is that the way we live can modify that genetic risk. Let me give you an example. You may have a parent with strokes, heart attacks, but if you exercise, and you may inherit that risk, but if you exercise, you eat well, lead a stress-free life, which mm-hmm. a lot of people don't do, then you can reduce your risk of having a heart attack. You can reduce the impact of those genes on your heart. Well, the same thing is true with the brain. And so all of the lifestyle changes that people should be adhering to are those lifestyle changes that will preserve their brain.
Yeah. I was thinking about a very good friend of mine whose father and brothers all died of heart attacks. Mm-hmm. And he chose to a different kind of lifestyle. He took up running and became quite a runner. Watches his diet a bit, not overly excessively, but he's lived far longer than his father did or his brothers.
That's exactly right. Years ago, there was a twin study out of Sweden, and they had identical twins, and they followed them over many years. And although there was, here are two people who have exactly the same genetic risk,
yeah,
but they lived different lifestyles. And so one of the twins would get Alzheimer's disease and one would not. And that was really the earliest signs that this was the risk for developing the disease was modifiable.
Talking with Dr. Mark Sager, the exercise important?
Exercise is absolutely important. And in fact, the study that you referred to out of California, they estimated that approximately 31% of the U.S. population over the age of 18 was physically inactive. And that even a 10% reduction in that figure could go a long ways to reducing the number of cases of Alzheimer's disease. Researcher at the university, Dr. Oziama Okonkwo, has been able to show that the people in our study who are exercisers have brains that look very different and better in some of the biomarkers we study, like glucose metabolism, blood flow in the brain, and so on.
All right, let's say we've got somebody listening who's 70 years old, hasn't exercised, probably a little overweight, and said, well, why should I bother now?
Well, it's important that, you know, it would have been nice to start at midlife or throughout your lifetime. Mm-hmm. But most of the studies that have been done have actually been done in people over the age of 65. And there's a beneficial effect even after the age of 65.
Okay.
So 30 minutes of walking, you don't have to be a jogger, you don't have to ride a bicycle. But 30 minutes of walking every day, if you can do it, that will help reduce your risk of developing the disease.
And of course, if you're doing that, your weight's probably going to be a little better.
Yes,
absolutely. Improve, and that's important. And diet, I guess.
Diet is very important, and there are some very nice studies that have shown that the people who eat the Mediterranean diet have about half the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease as those who don't. And the Mediterranean diet is lots of antioxidants, no fat, low fat, lots of omega-3 fatty acids, olive oil, an occasional glass of wine.
And so I actually quit smoking about 25 years ago, I think it was. And that's probably something you highly recommend anyway.
But, yes.
And then just sort of being mentally alert. What about that? You hear, people say, well, I'll do my crossword puzzles and I'll work my different games and that and then be socially active. It's important?
It's absolutely important. And it's kind of like muscles. If you use your brain, it's beneficial. It will increase your cognitive reserve. We've done a lot of analyses looking at cognitive activities. And believe it or not, it's games. Games seem to be the most protective. People who play games, whether it's crosswords or whatever, seem to perform better on our memory tests.
So my Uno game with my daughter on evenings.
I think that's a good idea.
Good card game. Chris in Mequon has a question. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question regarding, I'm 55, I was recently diagnosed with MS. Is there a correlation between MS and Alzheimer's?
Not that I know of. And again, the question is whether multiple sclerosis is related to Alzheimer's disease. And I am not aware of one.
Okay. How about, what's your thoughts on the statin drugs? Do they have a positive or negative effect on the Alzheimer's?
Dr. Cindy Carlson is at the university has been studying statins, and she has not been able to show a benefit necessarily, and also not a negative effect at all. And I think that the literature would suggest that the statins do not play a significant role right now.
Well, I appreciate it. It's hopeful news. Maybe I only have one thing to worry about.
Yeah. Good luck with you, Chris. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye. David in Slinger, Wisconsin. We'll turn to you next. David, hi.
Hi. Thank you. You just answered my question, one of the questions about the statins. The second one has to do with other dementias, like vascular dementia. How common is that, particularly with people with diabetes and high blood pressure, which are somewhat modifiable by exercise and diet?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Alzheimer's disease accounts for anywhere between 65 and 85% of the dementias. The remaining dementias, vascular dementia is or stroke-related dementia is very significant. There are other dementias, what we call Lewy body dementias, frontotemporal lobe dementias, controlling hypertension, exercising, controlling your weight, controlling the diabetes will reduce your risk of vascular dementias. There's just no question about it. And in fact, if you look at the autopsy studies and people over the age of 80 who develop dementia, the most common type is vascular.
Hmm. There we go. Thank you, David. Gary in Duluth, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, I'm a physician that follows the literature fairly closely. I beg to differ with the guest about the effect of statins on brain function.
Mm-hmm.
The FDA has recently insisted on black box labeling of all the statin drugs that it can cause memory loss. And Dr. Sager did mention drugs as being a factor. And there's a book that was published a few years ago called Drug-Induced Dementia, A Perfect Crime by a scholarly psychiatrist. And she looked at the basic science literature as well as the clinical literature, and discovered that all five categories of psychiatric drugs can cause dementia.
Mm.
So,
disagreeing.
I beg to differ with the caller in the sense that the NIA is actually supporting studies and has supported studies in the past to evaluate the benefits of statins in cognition. I know that there are reports that some people, not all people obviously, but some people have had some cognitive effects of the statins. But in general, the overall body of literature suggests no effect.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Gary, for calling. I appreciate it. I want to give Sharon in Black River Falls a chance to join in as well. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My husband was diagnosed with possible Lewy body disease 10 years ago and probable Lewy body disease 9 years ago. My question is about the correlation between Lewy body disease and Alzheimer's. When you talk about the plaques and tangles in the brain, are those the same as the Lewy bodies?
No, they're not. Lewy body has very different pathological signs and changes and has a somewhat different clinical course. Mm. But we also see mixtures, what we call mixed dementias, where people can have Lewy body as well as Alzheimer's disease pathology. So, but they are different diseases.
All right.
Yeah, and so like then with my husband, he doesn't have trouble with memory. He just has trouble with executive functioning. That's the part of his brain that's not working at all. So the other question then is just real quick, is this something that can be hereditated? Inherited.
Alzheimer's disease, there are genes that very definitely increase a person's risk if your parents had it. Lewy body, there is a tendency, but the link is not as strong as with Alzheimer's disease.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, as we visit with Dr. Mark Sager, recently retired director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute, professor emeritus at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show as we talk with him about ways to prevent Alzheimer's disease through lifestyle choices. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about preventing Alzheimer's disease through lifestyle choices with our guest, Dr. Mark Sager from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. We've had some questions about the signs and signals, and what are the earliest signs of Alzheimer's?
The earliest signs are usually related to memory, and it's short-term memory. Someone can remember what they did 10 years ago, but it can't remember what they necessarily had for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the early presenting signs can also affect language. People will have word-finding difficulties. And what's important is that the memory problems, the word-finding difficulties are progressive. They tend to be gradually progressive. And over a period of years, someone will eventually have cognitive deficits that are severe enough to begin to affect their functioning. That's one of the reasons why many people attribute minor memory changes to old age. Well, sometimes it is and sometimes it's not.
Yeah. And I suppose that makes it, in a way, makes it more difficult for, say, loved ones to, I mean, if this happens that gradually.
That's exactly right. And one way to think about it, though, one of our problems, and I think and that's going to change, it will have to change, is that we really don't routinely test memory. And many times someone could have normal functioning memory that has deteriorated over a period of years, and they'd never know that without the measurement of the memory in the past. So, and I think that once we develop more effective therapies, then I think that cognitive screening will probably become routine.
Is that how is it diagnosed by Alzheimer's? Is it that way? Or?
It's by history and then by testing. And the history is one of gradually progressive short-term memory loss, and that becomes severe enough to affect function again. And then that is confirmed with memory testing and a physical exam by your physician.
Yeah, okay. Grant in Madison, thanks a lot for calling. We'll get you on the air now. Hi, Grant.
Hi. My question is regarding someone who's experiencing a bit of dementia, but what I've noticed in the case of my mother is that I'm curious if there's a connection between her low vision. She has macular degeneration, and it seems like it really impacts a lot of her brain function. There's a lot she can't do to keep her brain active, and I'm curious if there's a connection between vision issues and the occurrence of Alzheimer's or dementia.
Very possibly, in the sense that you're right, she's probably not being stimulated as she was in the past. It's also possible that she could have two diseases, the macular degeneration plus some mild Alzheimer's disease. We know that life is, as Larry has been saying, we've been commenting on, lifestyle is important. Cognitive stimulation is important. Psychological stimulation is important. Socialization is important. Those people who have social networks, and that's probably something that your mother has affected your mother. She's become progressively more isolated. We also know that people who have a purpose in life seem to have a lower risk of developing disease. So, macular degeneration is going to isolate her progressively over time.
Hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Daniel in Minong, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I'm taking up guitar in my dotage, which is mentally stimulating. What effect does music have on Alzheimer's? Do musicians statistically suffer less from Alzheimer's?
I don't think there's a study about musicians, but I do know that music is beneficial to people who have Alzheimer's disease, and I'm not quite sure why. There's a study out of New York, and we're actually conducting a similar study in Milwaukee, developing a choir of people with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. And believe it or not, they can remember those songs. People can remember those songs even with dementia. And they seem to improve so dramatically with music. So music's beneficial. It's good for all of us.
My mentor, Maury White, who was a longtime on-air personality here at Wisconsin Public Radio, had dementia, just recently died at 96. But at his 95th birthday, I believe, he sang a solo in church. Mm-hmm. He had a wonderful voice, and singing was something that he loved and could do pretty close to the right to the end.
Yes.
And it was I think a blessing for not only him but for his family, other rest of his wife and family. Yeah. Pete in La Crosse, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning to doctors both. The caller a bit ago who suggested that her husband had been diagnosed with probable Lewy body dementia 9 years ago surprises me a little bit because my understanding from going to the Alzheimer's support group is that Lewy body dementia progresses quite rapidly, and I'd be really surprised if someone actually had that condition for 9 years. But anyway, the reason why I'm calling more so is the relationship between concussions and frontal temporal dementia, which I understand has been a problem with NFL players. And I'm just wondering if the doctor can maybe shed some light on the dose-response relationship as to, you know, is a few concussions almost as serious as what an NFL player goes through, or is that, you know, maybe not such an important consideration or factor?
Mm-hmm. With concussions, especially... First of all, there is a dose response relationship, and we see people in automobile accidents who are knocked unconscious for 5, 10, 15 minutes. The longer you are unconscious, the greater the risk of subsequent dementia.
Oh.
And so the greater the brain trauma, the greater the risk. And the issue with a lot of the football players is they were not necessarily knocked unconscious, but experienced repeated episodes of trauma to the brain. Think about the Green Bay Packers playing in the Ice Bowl at a time when the helmets that they had were nothing in comparison with today. So I think it's a major source of problem in the future.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Pete. That was a good question. Appreciate it. Appreciate it very much. Kim and Lady Smith. In fact, all the questions have been good. I shouldn't have just picked him out. Kim and Lady Smith, it's your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Hi. Hello. My mother had a liver transplant, and she was on prednisone for 20 years. And I know how it affected her skin, where she could barely bump into something. She'd have almost like a rip in her skin. And it's got to affect the organs. And then she did have some type of a CT scan, and they said that they saw, like, unidentified white, you know, bodies, you know. And was that a degenerative type thing of the cells, you think?
Can be. What happens with prednisone is that it can actually cause insulin resistance, and the insulin in the body goes up. That can turn off the metabolism in the brain and cause cognitive problems. Prednisone is also associated with what you just described as white matter hyperintensities. These occur in the brain and are vascular related.
Hmm.
One more question. Is it through an autopsy that the only way they can tell for sure someone had Alzheimer's because of the entanglements that you were talking about?
Yeah. Given the science right now, we can be approximately 90 to 95% accurate in the diagnosis. But to be 100% accurate requires an autopsy.
Yeah.
I see. Right. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Got an email from Paul. What, if any, data and opinions exist on whether and how much an existing condition can be reversed or its progression delayed, particularly when intervention is started in the early stages, perhaps maybe even before it's detected?
Right. There's no – once someone has experienced significant Alzheimer's disease and dementia, it's very – very difficult, and in fact, if we could prevent it or slow it up, then we would have what I would consider an effective treatment. Unfortunately, if we could, because the disease is diagnosed at its later stages, in other words, when someone's in their 70s and not when they're in their 50s, right now there's just no way to prevent it or to reverse it.
But that goes back to the points that were made about protecting ourselves. We can
That's
start
exactly
at 50
right.
years of age, or we can start at 20 or 10 years of
That's
age,
right.
being active. And
I would argue you should. Monitor your diet, exercise, monitor your weight. If you've got high cholesterol, make sure they're controlled. If you've got diabetes, make sure that's controlled. If you've got hypertension, make sure that's controlled. Reduce your vascular risk factors. Remain physically active, socially active, have a purpose in life. I'll never forget Dr. David Bennett from Russia, an Alzheimer's disease expert, said the best way to prevent Alzheimer's disease is to do all of those things and relax and have fun.
Yeah, there you go. I'm all for that. We have more callers on. Let's turn to Helen next. By the way, you can join in too. There's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Our guest today, Dr. Mark Sager, recently retired director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute. Helen in West Salem, thank you for calling.
Yes. I know a person that's been diagnosed with vascular dementia, and basically he seems pretty good. But recently, when he was out walking, he would suddenly kind of lean forward and take fast steps, and he's normally a slow walker, take these fast steps and leaning forward, and he actually did fall at one point. But now, then I know, in talking to people, I know three other people that have had this same problem, this starting to go faster and leaning forward. One person had a cane, so that helped stop him. But anyway, would this be related to vascular dementia or be something else?
No, I think it's related to the vascular dementia. And I also think what we also know is that people with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias are at risk for falls. And it's because the transferring of information from your feet and legs to your brain is impaired in your response to moving forward or to potential for falls is diminished. So there's no question that people with dementia are increased risk of falls, and it can affect their stability.
And this walking fast business, you've seen that?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And DeLynn in Randolph, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question had to do with Alzheimer's. I have a history of it on my birth mother's side. And I've always had memory problems, and more recently I've had a lot of word-finding problems, although that did seem to happen after I got in a car accident. But, you know, those are kind of the symptoms that you suggested, but I had neuropsych testing, and they said that wasn't it. So how accurate is the neuropsych testing, and how concerned should I be about this?
A couple things. One is that there's no question that if your mother had Alzheimer's disease, that you are at an increased risk. And that's just
my mother's grandmother.
Mother's
or
grandmother.
My mother's mother. If you're, my grandmother, yes.
Yeah. You're still at risk, but not as much as if your mother had developed it. So but the issue is that it sounds like you've had some problems with your memory and with word-finding difficulties for some time. And it may be that those are very mild deficits that you have noticed and other people have not, and that those mild deficits were not picked up or considered to be abnormal on the neuropsych testing.
Okay. Well, the word finding is recent.
Okay. But that's
last year.
Again, that's... And could I ask how old you are?
I'll be 50 this year.
Okay. We, in our studies, we are finding people who have very mild changes, and we're not quite sure what it's going to turn out to be. What we do know is that that can be progressive, but it but go for many years without really affecting a person's ability to work, to do the things that they enjoy doing. But it would be something to watch over time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And in the meantime, get your exercise in. Eat your a good diet, keep a healthy weight, DeLynn, and that's going to help. Not going to hurt, that's for sure.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Ray and Rhinelander, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have two questions. Prolonged chronic stress, off and on for a decade, how would that affect what you're talking about? And also... it seems that it's not uncommon that when people reach the age of 50, then 60 and 70 and 80, what is the range and degree of these type of things that come in at that time. And once again, thank you very much for being on the air, Doctor. You've been very helpful. And Larry, once again, thank you for everything you present. And I'll hear it off the air. Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks, Ray.
Great, thank you. First of all, we know that certain psychological conditions can chip away at what we call cognitive reserve and increase a person's risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. Chronic distress, what's called neuroticism, chronic worry is one factor. Chronic anxiety is another factor. Loneliness has been shown to be associated with more Alzheimer's disease pathology, as has depression. So the psychological stresses certainly can increase a person's risk. Usually, the onset of symptoms is noticed when a person's in their 70s. The average age of onset for the parents of the people in our study is 73. So it's unusual to have, except for early onset disease, to have people with symptoms in their 50s and early 60s.
There we go. Let's go to Rose in Mequon. Hi, Rose. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Okay, I'll be quick. It's pretty much devastated my family. And my question is it possible to have all the tangles and gunky stuff and not get the disease? In other words, can the brain sometimes just bypass that whole sticky mess and work just fine?
Yes. In fact, we know from some autopsy studies that we find people who are functioning absolutely normal, and yet their brain is packed with these plaques and tangles. And it's probably, again, related to lifestyle. What these people did over their life was to build up, you know, their cognitive reserve. They were cognitively active, socially active, goal-driven people, and hopefully relaxed and enjoyed life. But that's one of the problems with the new X-rays or the PET scans that are being done, because they do identify the presence of the amyloid in the brain. Well, many people may have amyloid in their brain at the age of 70 and never develop symptoms.
Mm.
That's great news, because yeah, I'm 66, and I have a demanding job, and I'm social and active, and it would have shown up by now. So
yeah,
yeah. Well, good news. Thanks.
Well, wait a minute. Now keep exercising.
Yes.
At least 30 minutes a day. Eat a low fat, low cholesterol diet. Maintain your weight. Don't smoke. Be socially active and mentally active. That's all.
Hey, cool. We'll do it.
And you still got a long way to go. So
yeah,
just keep it up.
That's right, Rose. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. We had an email from Noel in Milwaukee. Do you have any suggestions for getting a loved one to the doctor when it's believed they have dementia or Alzheimer's? My grandmother hasn't seen a doctor in 7 years, has been gradually losing her memory, very combative, and refuses to go.
I wish I had an answer to that. Unfortunately, I know exactly what the emailer is talking about. Many people forget that they have forgotten and really don't believe that they have a problem at all. And I can only suggest that if the grandmother, mother has friends, that those friends also intervene with the family and try to, again, it's one of those things that we don't have a cure for this disease, but we can make people safer, and we can reduce the stress around them, but we can't do it without some knowledge of what's causing the problem.
Yeah, for sure. What is the Carol in Wisconsin Rapids wonders, what's the Alzheimer's risk for people who've had siblings with the disease? Both my brothers, my only siblings,
If you have siblings with the disease, you're at an increased risk. Statistically, what it suggests is that your brothers may have had some genetic risks, which you may also have. Their lifestyle may have been different, and as a result, they developed symptoms and you have not. But there's no question that there are genetic risks associated with having a parent with the disease and the genetic risk with having siblings with the disease.
Caller in Madison wonders if adult ADD makes you more likely to develop dementia, and also if it makes it harder to diagnose since there are similar short-term memory issues with ADD.
That makes it very difficult to diagnose. And to the best of my knowledge, there is not a study that has looked at that relationship.
Mm.
But you're right, the testing is abnormal.
We have Tracy in Middleton on next.
My father is showing early signs of dementia, which may or may not be Alzheimer's. And he's chosen to share this with his friends and acquaintances on a trip to Hawaii with his wife, my mother. He told, when asked to introduce themselves to fellow travelers, he said, my name is Gurdon, and I, if I don't remember your name or information you told me yesterday, it's not that I'm not interested in you. I just am experiencing coping with this disease. Please understand. He found that people were incredibly warm and understanding, and several of the others on this trip were experiencing the same thing, and also chose to follow that path. And so it's a disease condition that many people are ashamed of, like we used to be ashamed of diabetes, depression, alcoholism, and so forth. And I think we need to come out of the closet about Alzheimer's.
And I agree. Has your father been evaluated, or did he make the diagnosis?
Well, he's in a testing program through the university. So he has not been definitively diagnosed, but he's involved in screening programs.
So he is having testing.
And he's from Middleton, so he may be in the Wisconsin Registry for Alzheimer's Prevention.
Or the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center as well. That's another.
Yes, he's involved in one through the VA,
yep,
where they have functional MRI tests and that
right.
sort of thing.
Great that he's involved in
that's
that
right.
program for sure. Well, Tracy, that's a wonderful, sounds like you had a great dad.
I do, and he is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for calling. And as we look ahead, just what are the goals here now for the registry?
What we would like to do is to identify factors, whether they're cognitive factors, lifestyle factors, proteins in blood, serum, cerebral spinal fluid, that are associated with the eventual development of the disease. And then you develop interventions such as drugs or other therapies to prevent it and start not when someone's 75 and already having symptoms, but to begin to start at the age of 55 or 50. One way to think about it is that if we don't wait until someone has a heart attack before we try to lower cholesterol. We do it for decades before someone is at risk of actually having a heart attack. The goal of the research has to be exactly the same with Alzheimer's disease. Identify people at risk very early and then intervene very early. And the interventions could be, as I said, lifestyle, and it could also be lead to the development of new drugs.
Well, I'm really appreciative, and I think all our listeners appreciate the work that you and your group has done and has continues to do, and I want to thank you so much. I hope we can do this again.
Thank you.
Dr. Mark Sager, recently retired director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute and professor emeritus at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And we're going to continue kind of along this line. According to the Well Spouse Association, over 7 million current and former spousal caregivers in the U.S. alone. And this can be a daunting task. And we're going to learn about that complex relationship and experience as we visit with our next guest coming up, Susan Allen Toth, who is the author of No Saints Around Here, A Caregiver's Days. That coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.